Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hey, Joe, how are you?
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. And hi again, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is Joe Vecchio here, your unconventional host. And it is Sunday evening, 6:48 p.m., December 5th, 2004, as we're winding out the year. I'm sorry I didn't have a show on Thursday, but, you know, shit happens. That's the way it is. I had a crazy work week, and let me tell you about what happened this week, because it was really creepy. It started Tuesday, and Tuesday was the last night for a lot of our temps that we had. About 30 days ago, we let go of the temps that we did have and hired new temps, and that caused a real screw up on our assembly line. Let me explain. For those of you who hadn't listened to the show before, let me get anal here for a second. For those of you who aren't familiar with me, let me explain. I work in a steel manufacturing shop, and I work on an assembly line inside of this. We manufacture circuit boxes for electrical outlets. Basically, when you turn the power off and on, the power breakers and stuff like that. I work for a company called Siemens, a very big international company. And the plant that I work in manufactures electrical circuit boxes. And there are several different assembly lines that put together these boxes once the boxes have been made. We start with flat sheet metal. We've got big machines that make the boxes, welding machines to weld them, people doing that by hand and all that. And then when the boxes are made and painted, they get sent to us, and we put the parts inside them and put them in boxes and ship them out to where they go. A lot of stuff goes to Home Depot. That's one of our big contractors. At any rate, the deal is there's been layoffs from here and there from time to time. It happens in the business because it's a seasonal business. But a lot of the plant is moving to Mexico. Not the whole plant, but enough of it. And one of the lines that I work on, line 9, and all the lines have different numbers. There's line 1, there's line 2, line 3 is gone, line 4 is still there. Line 5 is where I'm working currently. Line 6 is gone, line 7 is still there. Line 8 is still there, but I think that's going in line 9, which they're disassembling. And we were working on line 9, and we had a bunch of temps there, and they got let go. So Tuesday, and according to our union contract, I'm with the IBEW, the National Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We're only allowed to hire temps for 30 days, which is generally good, which in the sense of that means that they have to pretty much put them on the payroll after 30 days. Well, you know, they don't really have to. It turns out they're just letting them go and hiring new temps. So anyway, that's what happened on Tuesday, and they didn't hire any new temps for us. So I was a little surprised on Wednesday to find out that we're just kind of working shorthanded, which we're kind of used to anyway, even with the temps. But at any rate, we're making these one particular boxes slightly smaller than usual. And the guy at the back end of the line, I work on the front end of the line. I'm loading the boxes on. They have a big pallet full of these completed boxes. The boxes are done and painted. And, you know, I'm at the front of the line where I'm putting them on. And I'm putting in a little bit of insulation with a date code stamp on it. It's just a little thing that it's like puts a little sticker, like a pricing sticker, and it puts the date on there so we know what date it was made. That's important for stuff later. And because they're hand packing these, that is putting them in boxes by hand rather than just allowing them to go down through the line and monitoring them as they go through the boxing machine. They're hand packing them. I'm spacing them out a little by little, given about maybe 6 inches or so in between each box so that they have time to grab them and throw them in there. So the lady who's next in line past me, who's putting in a different part, she starts sliding them back. And I'm like, why are you doing that? You're messing up my space. And she says, well, they're putting on these other boxes. And sometimes we have to do things called rework. Basically, if we miss something, a screw didn't get put in or got it put in wrong, or if we had a wrong part in somewhere, we have to open up the boxes again, take the part out, put them back on the line, fix what we did wrong, and do it. Nobody likes to do rework. The supervisors don't like it because it screws up their production numbers because it takes time. But they were throwing the boxes on the line. And so, okay, so I pulled off all the boxes on the line that were there. And I figure, okay, I'll wait until they finish. Now, line 5, where like I said, where I'm working now, that's one of those lines where the belt moves. It rotates and moves of its own. It stops for a few seconds, then it moves for a few feet, then it stops again. You know, long enough for you to put in your part and do what you need to do. Line 9, where we were working, didn't have that. It was just basically a long belt with, like, rollers on it, where you could, and everything was self-paced. You'd put your part in and you slid it down to the next person. You know, and sometimes when we had to do rework, we could take two boxes side by side and put them down the line there and move them down because, you know, you don't have to worry about where the line's going to move. You can't really do that on line 5, but that's what they were doing. They were taking the rework boxes and throwing them on back to back, you know, right next to each other. And the guy in the back who's packing this stuff said, you take them boxes off the line. You take them off the line. And, you know, because I'm not going to, you know, I can, you know, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, the line moves. It, you know, it doesn't wait for you. I mean, you can turn it off by hand, but nobody really likes that. And, you know, he can't keep turning it off every couple of minutes. It's got to be a nice, even flow. You know, a rhythm. There's a rhythm to this. But they're throwing these things on like it was line 9, and they can't do that. But at any rate, my group leader comes up and says, I got to start putting stuff back on the line. And I said, but you're still putting rework on the line. You know, and she's, don't give me none of that. You know, I'll, you know, put them on the line. I'm fine. So, you know, I put them on the line and I figure, you know, they don't care about space. And so I'm throwing them right next to each other, back to back. What do I care? And then she goes, why are you putting them on the line like that? Don't you know you got to space them out so they come back up? I said, but you're throwing them on the line two at a time down there. We shouldn't be putting anything on the line at all until you finish with the rework. No, I'm tired of you yelling at me and all that stuff. I don't even know what she's talking about because I hadn't really talked to her that much over the last week or so. At least not in a way that dealt with work anyway. A lot of talk goes on the line, you know. So she apparently starts going over to the, you know, some of the other ones. Talking about, oh, you got to get Joe off the line. You got to get and the two of the temps that were there, people I had worked with in other areas, were upset about hearing that. And they went to John Dean, who is the supervisor. And, you know, they said, you know, we told John about what was going on. And I said, well, don't worry about it because I know she does this from time to time. She gets like that. She panics when she can't meet a production quota or if you just, you know, she gets a little panicky. So it's just not unusual for her to say stuff like that. Now, on Friday, we were putting on some different boxes and doing some stuff. And I was told to put these boxes on and leave a little bit of space because the lids that they had on them were kind of long and they didn't want them to interfere with each other. Okay? And so, you know, the guy told me space them out a little bit and I said, that's fine, you know, because I work with them. You know, my job as a loader is not just to throw as much as I possibly can on the line. It's to throw them on the line in a way that makes it most efficient for everybody. And if they're too close together and they're putting on these lids and the lids are interfering with each other, then they can't, you know, they can't be efficient about it. And that's what I did. And then the group leader comes up, you know, and says, you know, you need to, you know, put them close. I said, well, I'm leaving them like this because the guy in the far end said that they're, you know, they're putting on the lids and they're too long. I don't, you know, I'm the group leader. You do what I do. Whatever. You know, I'm tired of you guys. I'm not yelling at you, you know. And they said, you know, you have to talk loud in that place sometimes simply because it's loud in there. It's a steel manufacturing plant. We wear earplugs. And we wear steel-toed shoes. At least I do, anyway. Not everybody on the line. It's not a requirement for people on the line, but it should be for everybody, really. Because just because you're working on the line doesn't mean something heavy can't fall on you. And there's some heavy stuff in that place, let me tell you. Even one of those small boxes landing your feet, you can smash a toe pretty badly. But anyway, you know, I'm like, you don't have to yell at me. You know, I mean, I'm explaining to you why. I mean, I'll put them on however you want. I'll put them on back to back. I'll double them up if you want me to. I really don't care. I really don't care. But she starts getting all in my case, you know. And then later on, we went back to the box, the same box that we were working on Tuesday. But the date code stamper thing wasn't working properly. And it's an old piece of crap. You know, so I said, you know, I can't use this because it's broken. It's not working. You have to click it like 7 or 8 times before a single sticker comes out. And, of course, if you click it 7 or 8 times, you can't read the date thing because it's stamped 7 or 8 times. And she's like, don't you talk to me about that. And he's like, and I'm like, what is your problem? I didn't say that to her, but it's like, what is your problem? You know, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to say anything. Well, you got to say something if there's a problem. I said, I'm not going to say anything if... you know, if I'm going to get my head bitten off, you know, if you're going to chew me out like that, and there's no point in saying anything. If I got a problem, you know, nothing. You know, if I got a real problem, there's other people I can take it up with, I guess. And it's really, really annoying. And I was worried I was getting into trouble with her. And I'm like, for what? I don't know. And she was like, if you don't like it here, you know, I never said I don't like it here. Don't be putting words in my mouth. Oh, and on Wednesday, was it Wednesday or Thursday? Thursday. It was on Thursday because there wasn't enough work for us to do on line 5. They sent us over to another line, line 4. Now, by the way, I hate line 5. I hate line 5 because of that damn belt that always moves. You know, when you're trying to screw something in, usually everything works fine and it's not a problem. But if it doesn't work fine, you got to deal with that line because that line will move whether you've screwed the thing in or not. If the screw doesn't go in or something doesn't go in properly, if the label doesn't go on properly and you have to take a few seconds to fix it, it shows no mercy, people. It shows no mercy. But even more than I hate line 5, I hate line 4 because line 4 doesn't stop. Line 5, it'll move and it'll stop. It'll move and it'll stop. It'll move and it'll stop. And usually you have enough time, depending on what you're doing, to get what you need done. But line 4 doesn't stop. You have to work on stuff while it's moving. It doesn't move as fast when it moves like line 5 does, but it's a constant thing. And I was working near the end of that line, right next to the person who's packing. The loader is the guy in the front end, and the packer is the guy in the back end. Okay, not necessarily a guy. Sometimes it's a girl, whatever. And I'm putting in a couple of screws. I'm literally putting in a circuit breaker, sliding it in and putting 2 screws in there. And I was upset because you really need to have someone whose job is just to put the circuit breakers in. And all I need to do is concentrate on the screws. Efficiency, like I said. Putting the circuit breaker in takes both of my hands because they're big circuit breakers. And I got to hold the thing steady with one hand and put it in with the other hand. And then I got to drop everything else, grab the screwdriver, grab 2 screws and put it in. Doesn't sound like it's a lot. But when you're trying to get it done in just you know, about 10 or 15 seconds, you know, it can be a hassle. When you're trying to do something, you have to establish a sense of rhythm. And if all I had to do was screw them in, then I can keep one hand on the screwdriver, and it's a pneumatic. Is that the word for it? A pneumatic screwdriver runs off of air. And I put the screw in, you know, I can grab a couple of screws, put it in, zip, 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 and it's done. Send it down. And I won't have to worry about it so much. But here I got to grab it, slide it in there. And sometimes it doesn't slide in right. And sometimes the screw doesn't go in. You know, it's a whole big bullshit. And it's a big pain in the butt. And every now and then, you know, I had to stop the line. This line is easier to stop. But I had to stop the line so that I can get caught up because the screw didn't go in right or it fell down inside the unit somewhere, so I have to dig it out. You know, it's not an easy thing when they're going that quickly and you're just trying to establish a rhythm. And when you're underhanded, and you really shouldn't have been underhanded because they broke up the whole line and sent a whole bunch of people here and there. Anyway, I stopped the line once. The first time I had to do it, I stopped the line. And a lady from a little further, lady from behind me in the line comes running up. I mean, it's not as if she waited 5 or 10 minutes. You know, so how come isn't the line moving after that long? No, almost the second. Practically the second I stopped the line, here's this one. Why you stop the line? Why you stop the line? I said, I got to catch up. Don't stop the line. I said, if I have to turn the line off, I'm going to turn the line off. If you got a problem with that, you're not a supervisor. Do you get paid anymore if the line is moving or if it isn't? No. Then why should you care? If the supervisor wants to talk to me about it, I will explain it to the supervisor. In fact, the supervisor is sitting right there, and she sees me turn the line off, and she doesn't care because she sees what's going on. What do you care whether I turn the line off or not? It's incredible. It's incredible. Anyway, let's take a little break as I need to calm down. Let's hear from our friends at BuzzFlesh.com. And we'll come back with some more. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. This week, BuzzFlash goes international. Voter suppression, stolen ballots, fraudulent vote counts, misleading electioneering phone calls, discarded voter registration forms, exit polls that don't reflect the official government results, and more. Such behavior would put a real stain of credibility on democracy. That is, it would everywhere but in America, apparently. We aren't sure why the Bush cartel is coming down so hard on Ukraine Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych. After all, he's only accused of doing what the Bush campaign did in Ohio, Florida, and several other states. If anything, Yanukovych, were he American, would have probably held a key spot on the Bush-Cheney steal democracy a second time around team. I mean, how hard can the Republicans come down on a guy who knows that it's not the votes that count, but who counts the votes? Since the electronic voting machine companies in the U.S., who keep their software private, are pretty much a Republican concession, and key states, Florida and Ohio, are controlled by Republican operatives whose goal is to win at all costs, in spite of democracy, you'd think Bush would already have had Yanukovych to the Oval Office for a photo op. After all, Yanukovych is truly a Bush kindred spirit, worthy of a wink, a nod, and lots of juicy contracts from Bush contributors. But politics plays itself out in strange ways, and while Ken Blackwell, Ohio's Catherine Harris, is ready to announce Bush the winner of a highly disputed vote count in the Buckeye State, the White House is making all sorts of noises about democracy in Kiev, while we get one-party rule in America. You see, Bush, we all know, doesn't believe in democracy. He's playing a high-stakes game to try and yank Ukraine out from under his former Soul Brothers sphere of influence. That's right. Bush has soured on Putin, the former KGB chief who once made George's heart go pitter-patter, and Ukraine can play a significant role in the U.S.-Russian battle over Eastern Europe, control of the Black Sea, and even figures in the oil transport big game. So Bush doesn't give a whit about democracy in the Ukraine. It's all about power. To get under the skin of Putin, Bush is willing to sell out his real election-stealing soulmate, Ukraine Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych, our international BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. They say journalists at Ukraine's state-owned television stations revolted against the rigged election. In America, they just cash in their fat paychecks and parrot the party line. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Asking whether there is a liberal or conservative bias to the mainstream media is a little like asking whether Al-Qaeda uses too much oil in their hummus. The problem with Al-Qaeda is that they're trying to kill us. The right-wing media tells us constantly that the problem with the mainstream media is that it has a liberal bias. I don't think it does. But there are other far more important biases in the mainstream media than liberal or conservative ones. Most of these biases stem from something called the profit motive. This is why we often see a bias toward the sensational, involving scandal and hopefully sex or violence or please, please, please both. And there's the easy and cheap to cover bias, which is why almost all political coverage is about process and horse race and not about policy. Why have an in-depth report on school vouchers when two pundits who've spent 5 minutes in the green room looking over a couple of articles Xeroxed by an intern can just scream at each other about the issue on the air? There's the get-it-first bias. Remember the 2000 election? I believe there were some problems there associated with that one. Pack mentality, negativity, soft news, the don't offend the conglomerate that owns us bias, and of course the ever-present bias of hoping there's a war to cover. Does the mainstream media have a liberal bias? On a couple things, maybe. Compared to the American public at large, probably a slightly higher percentage of journalists, because of their enhanced power of discernment, realize that they know a gay person or two and are therefore less frightened of them. By the same token, I'll bet the media were biased during the Scopes monkey trial. But they were professionals and gave the Noah's Ark side a fair shake. But to believe there is a liberal political bias in the mainstream media, you'd have to be either not paying attention or just very susceptible to repetition. Yes, we've heard it over and over and over again. For decades, the media elite is an arm of the Democratic National Committee. Anyone notice the mainstream media's coverage of Clinton? For 18 months, it was all Monica all the time. There were just a few news organizations that did not succumb to this temptation, and I like to cite them whenever I can. Sailing Magazine, American Grocer Monthly, Jugs, and Big Butt, which is ironic because I thought Big Butt had a story. But how about the 2000 presidential campaign? Remember, in the first debate, Al Gore said he had gone down to a disaster site in Texas with Federal Emergency Management Agency Director James Lee Witt. Actually, it turned out that he had gone to that disaster with a deputy of James Lee Witt's. As vice president, Gore had gone to 17 other disasters with James Lee Witt, but not that one. The press jumped all over him. There were scores of stories written about how Gore had lied about James Lee Witt. It was as if James Lee Witt had been the most popular man in the United States of America, and Gore was lying just to get some of that James Lee Witt magic to rub off on him. Now, contrast that with the media's reaction to this Bush description of his tax cut in the very same debate. Bush said, "I also dropped the bottom rate from 15% to 10% because by far the vast majority of the help goes to the people at the bottom end of the economic ladder. By far the vast majority goes to the people at the bottom." That is what George W. Bush told America. The truth is that the bottom 60% got 14.7% of that tax cut. Gee, that's a pretty significant misstatement, don't you think? More important than whether a Texas fire was one of the 17 disasters you went to with American icon James Lee Witt. So what was the reaction of the liberal mainstream press? Nothing. Do I believe this is because the mainstream media has a conservative bias? No. I just think the attitude of the press was, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. Leave the man alone. He doesn't know. But of course he did, which is why George W. Bush says he doesn't mind being misunderestimated, because by misunderestimated, Bush means being underestimated for the wrong reason. The media thought he was kind of stupid. He isn't. He's just shamelessly dishonest. The mainstream media does not have a liberal bias. And for all their other biases mentioned above, the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, The New York Times, The Washington Post, Time, Newsweek, and the rest, at least try to be fair. However, there is a right-wing media. You know who they are: Fox News, The Washington Times, The New York Post, the editorial pages of The Wall Street Journal, talk radio. They are biased, and they have an agenda. The members of the right-wing media are not interested in conveying the truth. That's not what they're for. They're an indispensable component of the right-wing machine that has taken over our country. They employ a tried-and-true methodology. First, they concoct an inflammatory story that serves their political goals. Al Gore is a liar. They repeat it. Al Gore lies again. They embellish it. Are his lies pathological, or are they merely malicious? They try to push it into the mainstream media. All too often, they succeed. Tall tales. Is what we've got here a compulsion to exaggerate? New York Times, October 15, 2000. Occasionally, they fail. Despite their efforts, the mainstream media never picked up the Clinton as murderer stories. But even their failures serve their agenda as evidence of liberal bias. Win-win. You've got to admit, it's a good racket. They use these tactics to cripple Clinton's presidency. They use them to discredit Gore and put Bush into office. And they're using them now to silence Bush's critics. Bush is getting away with murder, just like Clinton did. See, that's how insidious the right-wing modus operandi is. Even I bought into the Clinton murder thing there for a second. And that's my point. We have to be vigilant. And we have to be more than vigilant. We have to fight back. We have to expose those who bear false witness for the false witness bearers that they are. And we have to do it in a straightforward, plain-spoken way. Let's call them what they are. Liars. Lying, lying liars. Hence the title of this book, Al Franken Tells It Like It Is.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe radio show.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.com. .net. That's V like in victory, folks. And that was Al Franken from Lies and the Lying Liars That Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, from the audio version of that great book. I like Al. Al is great. You know, when he first came on Saturday Night Live many, many years ago, I didn't care for him. He used to do the thing of the Al, Al and Tom, Davis and Franklin, Franken and Davis. And they did some really goofy little skits that I didn't think were particularly funny, but he got actually funnier as he got along. And when I first saw him after that, after all the stuff on Saturday Night Live, I saw him on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect, and it was during the convention. It was during the 96 election, I think it was, and they were doing a thing called Strange Bedfellows, and it was Al Franken with Arianna Huffington, and Arianna Huffington, who was now a liberal advocate, who at the time was a conservative advocate. She was the wife of Michael Huffington, who was running for Senate in California and spent nearly $50 million of his own money and didn't win. And Arianna was considered kind of a conservative at the time, but she realized what was going on in the Republican Party, and she promptly left. But they had a really good thing going there. They literally had a bed, and Al was in his pajamas and a nightcap, and Arianna Huffington wore a very conservative, collar to the neck nightgown, and they discussed the issues of the day, and it was very funny. And the last one, they got with each other and said, you know, it's been real nice working with you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, she said that to her. I said, you know, even though you're on the other side, I've come to appreciate and respect you and, you know, like that now. So thank you very much. And I also have come to admire and respect you and, you know, as a professional. And, you know, and she says, thank you very much. And Al just says, want to screw? And she smacks him. It was all rehearsed, obviously, but they did a very good job of it. I did hear a good joke the other day, and I saw this on a message forum, on the Bart Cop message forum. And I wonder, I think it's really funny. A first grade teacher in a red state is explaining to her class that she is a Republican and how nice it is that there's a Republican president. She asks her students to raise their hand if they too are Republicans and if they support George W. Bush. Everyone in class raises their hand except for one little girl. Mary, said the teacher with surprise, why didn't you raise your hand?
Because I'm not a Republican, said Mary.
Well, what are you?
I'm a Democrat and proud of it.
The teacher couldn't believe her ears. My goodness, Mary, why are you a Democrat?
Well, my mom and papa are Democrats, so I'm a Democrat, too.
Well, that's no reason for you to be a Democrat. You don't always have to be like your parents. What if your mama was a criminal and your papa was a criminal? What would you be then?
Then we'd be Republicans.
I like that one. I like that one. Oh, I get a lot of stuff from a lot of different sources. I am a member of different mailing groups, Democratic Party mailing groups, and I read the articles in there. Not all the time because they can be really long lists. I get them. They're on the Yahoo groups, and I choose to get them one a day rather than one at a time. There's a little less clutter, although I may change that. I don't know. But one of the things I got was an article from someone who was talking about how the Democrats, some Democrats, particularly Al Frum and Donna Brazile from the Democratic Leadership Council, are trying to tell us that we shouldn't listen to Michael Moore. That Michael Moore, the great filmmaker, the great filmmaker, basically. He's made the most popular and well-known documentaries of all time. Movies like Roger and Me, Bowling for Columbine, which won an Oscar for Best Documentary, and Fahrenheit 9/11, which he's going to put up and nominate for Best Picture. Because there's no doubt it would win Best Documentary, and I don't think there's any question about that. But he wants it to be a little bit more prominent, and that's up to him. A lot of people are mad with Mr. Moore to a certain extent because he supported Ralph Nader in 2000. But, you know, I can forgive that because he changed tone in 2004, realizing that what he did was wrong. There is a thing called forgiveness, ladies and gentlemen, if someone actually repents. I am perfectly willing to forgive, for example, the worst-hearted Republican, the worst, most cold-hearted Republican, if they actually would repent. But they never really repent. Whenever they apologize, it's kind of a smarmy little left-handed apology that just allows them to continue doing what they're doing. But anyway, this lady was more in particular angry about those statements, and she wrote the following. She said, I think it's time to face the fact that we are in as much danger from the Democratic Leadership Committee as we are from the Republicans. At least with the Republicans, we know they are the enemy, or at least our opponents. But with the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, we are caught off guard because we assume, incorrectly it turns out, that they want what the rest of us Democratic voters want, and that is not the case. When people like Al Frum and Donna Brazile tell us that Michael Moore is our enemy, it's time to wake up. Michael Moore is not the enemy. The overpaid consultants in the Democratic Party are the enemy. Win or lose the election, those guys collect millions of dollars so that they don't have much incentive to win when their paychecks come in no matter what. So while the rest of us face darker futures because Mr. Bush won and his policies will harm average people, these alligator shoe, hand-sewn suit-wearing ghouls will do just fine. Now let me add my own little commentary to that. Michael Moore, you know, started out just like most of us. Most of you listening, myself right here, he was a blue-collar working guy whose hometown of Flint, Michigan was devastated when General Motors decided that it was better for their profit margin to close down their Flint plants and move them to Mexico, since Mexicans would do the same job for about $5 a week, as I mentioned in another segment on another show. That, by the way, is exactly what is happening to me on my job. In fact, I mentioned that in the last segment, how the line I used to work on, Assembly Line 9, is being torn down. I got to watch the guy tear it down because you can see that whole thing from Line 5. It's right across the hall from there. And they're shipping that over to Mexico. You know, and once we run out of the boxes and stuff to do on Line 5, it's bye-bye for us. But unlike most people, when something like that happens, something bad like that happens, he had the energy, Michael Moore had the energy and a talent to do what most of us would like to do, and that is let people know what was going on and in a way we could all enjoy. His first documentary, Roger and Me, showed in detail the effect of the plants closing on the everyday citizens of Flint. I'll bet Al Fromm and Donna Brazile have never even been there. Now, I'm not even going to get into this whole, sometimes he exaggerates his points for comedic effect bullshit. It doesn't make a difference. You know something? To a certain extent, Michael Moore speaks for me. He speaks for all of us working slobs who are getting screwed over by corporate greed. We are the ones who are going to pay the price for the Republican leadership's economic policies. Not Donna Brazile and Al Fromm and Terry McAuliffe. It's us. We are the ones who are going to go out and fight the Bush administration's wars. We are the ones who are going to be sold into slavery by this so-called ownership society. You know what they mean when they say that? They own society. It doesn't matter whether you come from a slave state or a free state. If you're poor and not politically connected, you're getting the shaft. All Moore all Michael Moore is doing, is letting us know this. But the high horses in the Democratic Leadership Committee don't understand any of this because they no longer have any connection to us. They collect their huge contributions from other Democratic high horses and move on. They never have to worry like we do about things like rent money or whether or not they'll have enough to buy groceries for next week or whether they can afford for their prescription medicines. They're swimming in it, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, the poor working slobs of the South, the slave staters who voted for Bush, they get treated no better by the Republican leadership than we working slobs in the Democratic Party get treated by the Democratic Leadership Committee. The multi-million dollar DLC think tanks. The only difference between the free state blue-collar workers and the red state rednecks is that the blue staters know we're getting screwed over by our political leadership. And the red state rednecks are too blinded by their ideology to figure it out. When the Republicans use Michael Moore as a lightning rod, the slave state rednecks scream with them in chorus. And that's the true shame of it all, because Moore speaks for them far more than the smartasses of the Republican Party leadership do, and certainly more than the privileged elite Bush family. And, you know, I don't know how to change the rednecks' minds. I'm not even sure if it's possible to change their minds. But I do know that Michael Moore is much more their friend than is Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell or Dick Cheney or George W. Bush. I mean, I can understand perfectly why the Republican leadership and their corporate backers trash Moore. They hate working people just like they hate our soldiers. Oh, yeah, they're useful for photo ops, but that's about it. When it comes to doing anything to actually help them out, like in the soldiers' case, buying them the body armor that they need to protect their lives, well, sorry, that cuts into our profit margins. And, you know, for all the rights blathering about Michael Moore, he is a monster of their own creation. The working slob, like the rest of us, forced into action as the result of corporate greed. If General Motors had tried to keep the plant in Flint open, if governmental policies made things better for working people in those situations, we would never have even heard of Michael Moore. Okay, maybe he might have gone on to be a filmmaker anyway, but it's doubtful his films would have taken the tone they have. It wouldn't have been necessary. But what I don't understand is why some factions of the Democratic Party, particularly the Leadership Council, have decided that they want to turn their backs on working people. Since 1932, the strength of the Democrats has always been the working class. Yes, it wasn't perfect. There was still no small amount of racism involved. There was a tendency towards conformity. But things, for the most part, were so much better for working people like us back then. We could have a decent job making more than enough money to pay the bills and have the time and disposable income to make that work meaningful, to enjoy the fruits of our labor. Even slackers like me, who didn't have a real idea about what kind of career we wanted, and I still kind of don't, the radio gig would be nice, we could get along just fine working a 9-to-5 job. People like Michael Moore, people like myself, and most of you out there reading, you know, listening to this, reading this, I'm reading this, we were the ones the party leadership would listen to. Even some Republicans, the ones that weren't commie baiting, stood up for us. Not anymore. The issues that Michael Moore deals with are real issues. They affect the lives of every single one of us, whether you're talking about losing your job or the benefits from your job, getting your pay lowered, or getting called off to fight in a war. Michael Moore speaks for me more than the snake oil salesmen in the Republican Party and their fawning wannabes and the Democratic Leadership Council ever could. That's why if Al Fromm and his Democratic Leadership Council pals manage to get control of the Democratic Party, we won't need to leave the Democratic Party. It will have left us. Let's take a little break. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec@bellsouth.net. .net. V like in victory, folks. It is, 9:11 p.m. on Sunday, December 5th, and I'm actually doing the show in pretty good time here compared to the way I usually do it. I usually get it done just in time to get on Rant Radio. And hi to all my friends on Rant Radio. Hi to all my friends at the White Rose Society. My thanks to Ben Birch for getting the archives up there, and he's back active again, and he's got some exciting changes coming to the White Rose Society that I'm looking forward to seeing implemented. How is everybody doing this evening? I came across an article the other day, or today actually, from the New York Times Magazine, and it was about a company called Buzz Agents, BZZ Agents. I'll call it Buzz Agent. And from the article, it says the following. It says, given that we are a nation of busy, overworked people who, in poll after poll, claim to be sick of advertisers jumping out at us from all directions, the number of people willing to help market products they had previously never heard of for no money at all is puzzling, to say the least. Buzz Agent, which has a particularly intense relationship with its fast-growing legions of volunteers, offers a rare and revealing case study of what happens when word-of-mouth theory meets consumer psychology in the real world. In finding thousands of takers perfectly willing to use their own creativity and contacts to spread the good news about, for instance, alfresco sausage, it has turned commercial influence into an open-source project. It could be thought of as not just a marketing experiment, but also a social experiment. End quote. Now, you know, I can understand why people want to volunteer their time or their money for a cause they believe in. I mean, I do this radio show and I write the blog for nothing because I believe in certain things and I want to make my voice heard. I mean, that's pretty clear and obvious. I'd like to make some money off of it, certainly. And certainly you all are willing to, you know, are perfectly capable of donating if you so desire. Or if you can afford it. I'm not going to push anybody. You know, I don't try to push that. You know, that's not my deal. But I do it because I like it. And because I feel this is an important thing for me to be doing. It's what I can do for what I feel is an important cause. And, you know, I can understand people endorsing a product or working on a commercial for a product they may or may not use or even like. I mean, hey, you got to make a living, right? I mean, I don't even necessarily have a problem with people who work for a company or an advertising firm hired by a company pretending to be consumers to spread the word about a product. An example that they gave in the article that I mentioned, that I'm talking about, showed how Sony had employees going around pretending to be tourists or whatever, asking other people to take their picture and then handing them a Sony Ericsson camera phone to take the shot, which is a plug for the product. I think that's a great idea, to be perfectly honest. And I don't have anything wrong. I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, even people who talk about a store that they like or a restaurant that they go to do so because they really like it. I always plug the Avondale Pizza Cafe, which is not far from me, down the street a little ways, because I really like their pizza. They make outstanding pizza. And when somebody at work asks me, you know, if I like any particular pizza, I mention that place. And there's nothing wrong with a consumer doing that for, a product or for service that they happen to like. And I happen to like this little restaurant. And there's a little Chinese place in the Belvedere Shopping Center. I think it's called Hong Kong Cafe or something like that. But it's right near a few stores down from the Kroger's in the Belvedere Shopping Center. And they have excellent Chinese food there. I go there whenever I can afford it. And it's excellent because it's fresh and they make everything right there. It takes them a little longer, but that's okay. I'm willing to wait because the food's so good. Isn't that food great, honey? My wife's, oh, yeah. They make excellent dumplings. And I got no problem plugging it because I enjoy it. And also, another reason why I do tend to support those places, in part, is because they are locally owned. They are not corporate franchises. I mean, I might say a nice thing or two about Target, or as I call it, Target, from time to time. But, you know, let's face it, they're a corporate monster. You go to a Target, the Target that I go to, if I go to them up here in off of La Vista Road, and it's the same as any other Target. You know, they're all basically the same thing. Walmart's the same way. Of course, I despise Walmart because of the way they treat their working people. But, you know, there are some people where I work who praise Walmart incessantly. And I'm like, whatever. I try to get them to stop. But, you know, I can't put a gun to their head. And, you know, advertising, as much as I sometimes despise the amounts of advertising that we get voiced and honest, and I think we get way too much, advertising is very important. I mean, how is anybody going to buy a product if they don't know it even exists, or even exists if they don't know anything about it? And frankly, I happen to enjoy a well-made advertising campaign. I used to love those the beer commercials they had years ago, Taste Great, Let's Filling, with all the different sports stars in it. The one with the Bob Uecker in particular. Oh, I must be in the front row. You know, and he's out there in the cheap seats. They move him to the cheap seats, and he's way up there out in the balcony. You know, hey, these are great seats, buddy. You know, hey, you missed the tag. I love that commercial. And because of that commercial, those cheap seats out there became known as the Bob Uecker seats. I felt kind of guilty because, you know, I don't drink beer. As I mentioned before, I am like the anti-guy. I don't smoke. I especially don't smoke cigars. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I'm not a big deal on gambling. And I'm not extremely competitive. But, you know, to all of that, that makes me somehow less of a man. You know what? Fuck that. I'm a man. You don't believe me? Ask my wife. She'll tell you. But at any rate, you know, I don't mind advertising to a certain extent. I just think we have too much of it. But advertising in and of itself, I think, is important. Hey, I try to advertise the blog and the show, you know, but I'm just not really good at it. Yeah, I'm a liberal. But you know what? Like all good liberals, I believe in capitalism. I love capitalism. I just understand that the government needs to regulate industry's worst aspects. That's really all it means about liberalism. And it changes from age to age. What needs to be done, what doesn't need to be done. When to do something, when to lay off. But what I don't understand is why people will freely give their own time and skill to help a company market a product when they get nothing out of it at all. I mean, I thought it was bad enough when people wore, you know, the Nike t-shirts or something like that that advertised a particular company. Because, you know, so what, are they paying you for that? They should have given you that t-shirt if they're doing that at the very least. You know, you pay for the t-shirt and then you're helping sell more of the t-shirts. What are that company doing for you? Unless maybe you work for the company. I don't know. I can see that. But in this case, here we have people spending their time to help a company make some more money. Listen to this. This is from the article again. So during active stretches, Karen Bollert, I hope I pronounced that correctly, puts in between 5 and 10 hours a week talking up products and writing reports about her activities. She signed up for many campaigns, including a perfume, a line of jeans, and a gel to soothe skin below the eyes. What, she was asked, if not the potential to get some free prizes for effort, made her bother to volunteer with Buzz Agent. First, she said, she gets the chance to sample new products shortly before they hit the stores, so she gets to feel a bit like an insider. Second, she's always liked to give people her opinion about what she's reading or what products she's using, and Buzz Agent gives her more to talk about. Third, if she does like something, then telling other people is helpful to them. So participating is both a chance to weigh in and be heard, and also something close to an act of altruism. Now, how altruism is kind of a bad word to use, in my opinion, because altruism is something you do unselfishly. But usually the targets of such feelings are family or friends or an organization or an interest that they believe in, like a political party. It's generally not given to a company whose interests will sometimes run counter to what your own interests are. And, you know, to be fair, if I try hard enough, if I think about it long enough, I think I can probably understand partly why someone might want to do these things. And first of all, you look at it, looking at the article, most of the people involved are teenagers who are looking for something to make their lives a little bit more interesting. I can understand that. You know, when you're a teenager, you're young, you're full of energy, you've got your whole life in front of you. You know, you haven't been dragged down by reality yet. You think you can conquer the world, and in some cases, you know, that optimism is justified. But, you know, they want to feel like they're part of something that's greater than they are. And hey, as a liberal, I can certainly understand and respect that. I mean, that's part of one of liberalism's credos, to belong to something that you know is bigger and greater than you are. We equate that with our country or our community or our business, you know, that we work for. We equate it with that, you know. But to me, I worry about whether or not this is going to set a bad precedent that can be taken advantage of at a later time. It's kind of like that person in the workplace who always insists on doing things at work that aren't really necessary, but don't get anything tangible for it, any kind of recognition as far as money or something. You know, it's like that lady who is coming up to me, "Don't stop the line." You know, what does she care? She should relax and let the line be stopped. It's not her fault that it was stopped. Why should she be harassing other people to make work harder for themselves, you know? I mean, I do stuff like that sometimes myself because I'm one of those people who likes to finish what they start. If I'm in the middle of something and I want to, you know, keep going because I feel like I can reach a certain point to stop, then I'll stop. That's why about, you know, sometimes enforced break times can be a trouble for me because I like to get a certain stopping point. Because my problem is when I am finished with a project, it does take me a bit to get worked up to get to the next project. And when you have a job like mine that's repetitive to begin with, you tend to lose a kind of enthusiasm for the repetitiveness of the job. I mean, you accomplish something and you want to move on to the next thing, but the next thing is pretty much the same as the last thing is. Mark Satin from The Radical Middle. Talked about the first job that he had in an industrial thing. He just basically grabbed a couple of cans and moved them around. He did that 8 hours a day, and it drove him crazy. and my job sometimes drives me crazy. But in a certain extent, I kind of enjoy it because I get to relax. And there are people there who try to push you to do harder and more, and they're not the supervisors. You know, and it's like, look, why are you making it more difficult on me? Why are you making it more difficult than everybody else? You know, but some people are just like that. They're not really interested. I'm just a slacker. I'm a loser. You know, but I get treated no different than they do. Now, part of me says that I shouldn't worry too much about this. I mean, it's just a few teenagers who want to feel empowered. And probably it's nothing more than that. But in these days, when our jobs are going overseas so that companies can pay working people less, when we're expected to just accept the fact that we're going to have to live with less than our parents had, or that a 50 or 60 hour work week should be the rule rather than the exception, then I get a little cautious when I hear stuff like this. And I also worry about people becoming living commercials. I mean, we get enough advertising thrown at us on a daily basis. We don't need to worry that if a friend tells us about a product or a service they like, that they have some sort of ulterior motive. I certainly don't want to be like that. And I don't want anybody to think that when I recommend a place like the Avondale Pizza Cafe or the Hong Kong Cafe, or the Hong Kong place, the China place that I go to, that I'm doing it because I'm getting a couple of dollars on the side. You know, I like to talk when I talk on this show. See, I don't have any sponsors or anything like that. If I mention Rant Radio, I mention it because, you know, they were very nice to put me on the network. Although, you know, I could say I'm doing them a favor by providing them with programming. But I don't have any ulterior motive in that. I wasn't, you know, if I plug them, I plug them because they're doing something for me. They're putting me on their network where people can listen. And that's fine. That's the way it should be. It's reciprocal. You know, it's reciprocal. But I don't want anybody to think that, you know, I'm just doing it for no reason. Excuse me, I don't want people to think I'm plugging it simply because they're doing that. I wouldn't be on it if I thought they were a crummy network. You know, and to be fair, you know, the buzz agent people, they don't really, you know, force people to do something they don't like. I mean, if one of their agents, as they call them, doesn't like a product, they're not forced to endorse it. You know what I mean? So, anyway, I see by the clock on the wall that it's just about time to end this thing. And I hope you had a good time. Well, you know, I'm working on different things for the show. I've got some ideas in mind, too, that I'm going to be talking about hopefully next show. And I've got some ideas, hopefully, that will increase the span of the show. If you live in the Atlanta area and you want to help out, write me an email, joevec@bellsouth.net. Once again, the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And my name is Joe Vecchio. I am the voice of the working man, and I'm signing off. Until next time. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug, with a creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do everything, open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve.